The hour of 1 o'clock having arrived here, we will call a meeting of the Transportation Finance Committee to order. We do not have a quorum at this time yet, so we won't officially call it order, but we do have quite a few presentations by some local governance and other transportation groups that we will hear from first and then get into the bills. We will officially call meeting to order and pass our minutes when we do have a quorum. First up is Margaret Donahoe, Director of Minnesota Transportation Alliance, and Ms. Donahoe, do you have a presentation, or you're good to go? All right. With that, please state your name and who you represent for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I am the Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today on Transportation Day at the Capitol. Hopefully you all have heard from some constituents today. We are very committed this session to advocating for a long-term transportation funding package. This is important all across the state, both for highways, bridges, transit, and for the state system as well as the local system. The Alliance does include most of Minnesota's counties. We have city members. We have the Township Association, in addition to private sector companies, transit systems, other modal representatives. And it really is a diverse statewide coalition of organizations that are the people who are really on the front lines every day building, designing, operating Minnesota's transportation system. And we are pleased to be here today to especially focus on the challenges for local governments of maintaining the transportation system that's under their jurisdiction. Local governments have jurisdiction over more miles of roads and more bridges than the state does, and it continues to be a challenge for local governments to maintain the system. They also often have jurisdiction over transit systems in greater Minnesota as well. As you know, Minnesota's transportation system is aging, but another really important factor is cost growth. So the construction cost index, which we do keep track of, has been growing pretty significantly. It usually is higher than general inflation. And that continues to be something that erodes the purchasing power of the funding into the highway tax distribution fund. One thing we wanted to bring out is the needs. And we know that it's often debated and talked about what is the need and what is that dollar amount and what goes into determining what's the dollar amount that's needed for transportation funding. As you know, the governor created a Transportation Finance Advisory Committee a few years ago to study this exact issue and look at what is the gap between what's needed on the transportation system and the amount of funding that's projected to be available over the next 20 years. For local governments in particular, it was estimated in 2012 that maintaining the system on the county system for the next 20 years leaves $3 billion or $150 million per year annual funding gap. So this is just to maintain the system that exists today, the county state aid system. So $150 million per year is the shortfall just to take care of that system. In order to really do what's needed on the system, in other words, strengthening roads to a 10-ton standard, doing some expansion in certain places, eliminating deficient bridges, the unmet need is closer to $9 billion for the county state aid system and another $9 billion for county roads off of the county state aid system. So it's a very significant shortfall. For cities with a population of 5,000 or more that receive MSA funding, the shortfall just for maintenance on that system is $50 million a year. And for non-MSA streets, is $250 million per year.
Ms. Donahoe, I need to interrupt you just for a minute because we do all have a quorum, so we will officially call the meeting to order, and I will entertain a motion by Representative Johnson on our minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes from February 14th, Valentine's Day.
All right, we have a motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. I appreciate the interruptions. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as you can see, there is a huge unfunded need, and part of that puzzle, we believe, is increasing funding into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund so that the 29% that goes to all 87 counties and the 9% that goes to the 148 MSA cities will be increased. But we know that that increase is not likely to cover the extent of the funding gap that we have. So in addition to a transportation funding package with ongoing dedicated revenue into the trust fund, we also believe that part of the solution is looking at the local road and bridge programs that are typically funded in the capital bonding bill. In 2002, MnDOT issued a report in response to legislation requiring a study of state funding for local road improvements. The report concluded that a new funding program, the Local Road Improvement Program, was needed to assist local governments with both the local cost share of state trunk highway projects and to assist with some of the cost of regionally significant projects. So that program was created, and from 2006 through 2015, the legislature has provided a total of $285.3 million for the local bridge program, leveraging almost $570 million in total funding and allowing hundreds of local bridges to be replaced or repaired. For the Local Road Improvement Program, from 2002 through 2016, the legislature has provided $139.3 million in funding, again leveraging other funds to complete 289 local road projects. Without any significant funding in the last couple of years, the waiting list for the local bridge program has grown to include 35.6 million in bond funding requests. In addition to that, there are two significant local bridge projects that are seeking funding: the 10th Avenue Bridge in Minneapolis at 31.8 million and the Kellogg Boulevard Bridge in St. Paul at 42.9 million. So clearly, there is a need for a much more significant level of funding for that program than is typically what we've seen in the past. So the funding need continues to be high, and we provided a handout just asking counties to respond, which hopefully you all have. But the response from just 66 counties identifying specific projects that could be completed in the next 2 years that are not funded currently adds up to $1.3 billion in need. This funding, of course, would leverage additional funding and would allow all of these projects to be completed in the next couple of years. I just want to conclude by, again, pointing out the cost pressures that local governments face. The material costs that have increased, all of the pressures that they face trying to just take care of the systems that they have. And on the back of your handout is you'll see a couple of charts that show over time Minnesota's construction cost index. And I think this gives you a good sense of why it has been such a struggle to maintain the system under local jurisdiction. So we're really asking for both a transportation funding package with ongoing dedicated revenue that will flow through the Highway Trust Fund to local governments and funding in the capital bonding bill for important transportation assets under the jurisdiction of local governments. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we do have at least a couple questions. Representative Rembeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Donahoe, so when you're saying $150 million shortfall, essentially, per year, I mean, are you looking at all funds? So we know that there's federal pockets that we have access to as a state on a regular basis. So that's what I'm curious about.
Ms. Donahoe?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rembeck, yes, the TFAC group did look at pretty comprehensively the funding that's available. It's a little harder on the local system to estimate federal funds because most of the federal funds go to MnDOT. But also looking at local property tax dollars and other dollars. At that time, there weren't a lot of counties in greater Minnesota using the local option sales tax, which I know you'll hear more about, as a tool. So local governments do have some other tools besides state funding, but this was really focusing on the projected state funding and the need to increase that state-level funding to meet the needs.
Mm-hmm. Representative Renbeck?
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, I think that because there are numerous pots of money through which road construction occurs, it does seem to me that to be looking at just one level is just not enough. And, you know, I think the big picture is going to be really important. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I was looking at the map that you have here. Is there a particular reason, or can you give maybe the share with the committee here, looking in the metro, the local option sales tax seems to be predominantly or only in the metro. Can you give us just a brief history on that, why that is and when that happened?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, I can just speak to it briefly. I know the Association of Minnesota Counties will also be talking about it. But in 2008, when the legislature passed Chapter 152, that was really the first time that a local option sales tax specifically for transportation by counties was passed. And it was initially a quarter cent in the metro area that the seven counties were authorized to levy specifically for transit, and five of the seven counties opted to do that. There was also authorization for other counties to levy a local option sales tax up to a half a percent, but with a requirement that there be a local referendum. In 2013, that referendum requirement was removed by the legislature. And since then, we've seen more counties levy a local option sales tax for transportation. In the metro area, the counties outside of the counties that created CTIB also used that statute to look at possibly using that tool. So Scott County, for instance, just recently adopted a half-cent local option sales tax for transportation. But it kind of started out in the metro area because that initial sales tax could be implemented right away by the counties, didn't require a referendum, but it was specifically for transit.
Mr. Chair, talking about the county state aid highway formula, where's the majority, or what's the geographic breakdown between metro and rural of contributions to the county state aid highway system?
Fund? Ms.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to speculate without double-checking, but last year there was legislation passed that it basically breaks down to 68-32 Greater Minnesota Metro, and I believe for part of the formula that goes into that was kind of put into statute as opposed to MnDOT having to go through a long, complicated formula for figuring out the distribution. It got a little complicated in 2008 because there was a new formula put in place for new money, and then the old money used the old formula, so it's gotten more complicated over the years.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Costa.
I was maybe looking for percentages. My understanding is kind of it's about 50-50, or is that?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, I believe it's closer to 68-32. Greater Minnesota gets 68, Metro 32.
That's the district, Mr. Chair?
Representative Kosnick.
That's the distribution of the revenues or the contributions into the fund?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, the distribution of the revenue.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. Okay, so I understand that. The contributions into the fund, what do you have an idea of the geographic proportionality of where the money's coming from?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, I could get that for you. I don't want to say off the top of my head, but I can get that information for you and the committee.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Donahue, and thanks for all that you and the Alliance have done. It's been a pleasure working with you for 4 years, but we haven't succeeded. I want to pick up on your point about it. If I understood, it's we're short $150 million a year to maintain local government roads and bridges throughout the state. You then talked about, it helps me to think per year, okay? But you, then you talked about a kind of a real investment, improving roads, kind of investments that, that are wise, that, that a rational person would make to maintain the system. What's that shortfall?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, yes, and that $150 million a year is just for the county state aid system. So cities, townships have additional needs. And the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee did have a couple of scenarios. One was just maintenance of the existing system. The other scenario was what was called creating a world-class, economically competitive system. And I believe for that scenario, the shortfall was closer to $9 billion over 20 years. So I'm not sure I can do the math in my head, but whatever that works out to annually, that's closer to what's really needed if we want to build a 10-ton local road system, eliminate all the deficient bridges, you know, do some expansion in key areas. That's closer to what's really needed.
President Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I may be asking for an opinion here, but if we're going to address that shortfall, and I think, members of the committee, this is real. This is our investment for moving goods and people across Minnesota. We can only pretend so long when it's not being addressed. But addressing that shortfall, would you say is there value in having constitutionally dedicated funds, increasing constitutionally dedicated funds to the formula in order to address this shortfall? Is that a better approach, or would it be a better approach to use the general fund?
Answer carefully, Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Our members appreciate the constitutional dedication because it has provided a lot of stability to highway funding in Minnesota for many years, and that's why the people of Minnesota voted for those constitutional amendments. We do believe that having dollars flow through the highway trust fund with the formulas that are in place for local governments is something that is important for planning purposes, for stability. Those are formulas that sometimes can be contentious, but they have been worked out over a number of years. They've been changed periodically. And that way it does ensure that there's a process for determining how those dollars will flow all across the state. And it is a very large geographic area. So a lot of factors go into determining how those funds are distributed. But it is important for planning purposes to have stability and to have some idea of what level of funding to expect in the future.
Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also want to echo my thanks to you and your organization for all the great work over many years. And I don't remember if it was in this committee or the Transportation Policy Committee, but I had asked a question, but I don't know whoever was on the witness table couldn't answer it, so maybe you can. And I think it's a very important one. And so the question is, for every public dollar that we spend on roads and bridges and transit systems, but I think specifically roads and bridges in this case I'm interested in, how much do we get back in return? What is the ROI? Because I think Itasca had done a study for transit, but do we know for roads and bridges what that is?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, yes, actually, I'd be happy to share a study with the committee that we had done, I believe it was a couple of years ago, on the impact of a $600 million per year increase in highway funding. I believe it was for every dollar, it was $2.40 was the ROI.
Yeah, that was my recollection, but I'm glad that you affirmed that, so thank you. So members, I do think that sometimes we get caught up in the spending side of the equation, but we get over twice as much back, and I just feel the economic impact of a solid transportation infrastructure improvements are the yield is so great for our state and particularly all parts of the state, so I'm glad that you were able to affirm that.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lee had the answer to the question that was asked earlier about the amount of revenue, what the percentage of revenue generated. I think it was the representative there who asked. I can't remember.
Representative Kosnick was asking the question.
So the Mr. Lee gave me the number. So in the metro area, 48% of the revenue is generated here, 32% comes back. So in the other districts in greater Minnesota, 52% of the revenue and 68% goes back to them.
Thank you. I believe that's the end of the questions. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Right on schedule. Members, I apologize for being late, but I was over at the Supreme Court chambers. They're having an open house, and if your schedule allows, I urge you to go over there and pay a visit. The rooms have turned out fantastically. It looks great, but allow extra time because I felt like a salmon swimming upstream. The Capitol is getting its first test of a major protest today. There's lots of folks in the building and making lots of racket, and that's all part of the process too. Next up we have the local governments. Are they coming up one at a time or together? I don't know if you're coming up as a team or as individuals. Either way works for us. I have townships on my list first. Oh, that's all. I'm sorry. I was misreading. Townships. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Ken Sewell. I'm General Counsel and Director of Governmental Relations for the Minnesota Association of Townships. I believe the handout that I'm going to be speaking from is being distributed right now. It's this shorter one that just says Township Road and Bridge Overview. The larger handout is one that just gives a lot of background on our association. We thought some of you might have some interest. When you aren't sleeping tonight, you can take a look and get the background of what our association does in totality. We have 1,781 townships in the state of Minnesota. 1,779 of those are active members of our association. The two non-members, I think, have a combined population of about 12, so they're rather small and haven't participated. We keep trying, though. There's an estimated population for the state demographer's office of 924,158 people living in townships. 56,000 miles of road. We usually say if you're driving on gravel, you're probably driving on ours. 56,000 miles of road, and these are roads that are what we call Highway User Trust Distribution Fund Ready, or to use the term that's not popular right now, gas tax eligible. This is our main source of outside funding, but in order to receive it, the road has to be open for at least 8 months out of the year. And we have a number of seasonal roads, a number of minimum maintenance roads that don't require winter use, and so they'll be shut down, closed, barricaded for the winter months. And while we're obligated to repair and work on those roads, we do not receive any outside funding. That's strictly property tax driven at that point. So that's in addition to the 56,000 miles that receive assistance from state funding. The exact number of miles will fluctuate. We have annexations. You know, if a city annexes the township or a portion of the township and takes both sides of the road, it becomes a city street. Road reversions by the county. We have some counties that have been doing very active road reversions. We have others that have been very calm and working closely with our members. My executive director, who I'll introduce a little later, and I have been working with the county engineers, and we're trying to develop a best practices guide for turnbacks. Because obviously counties are as concerned about funding as we are, but for us to pick up some of that extra expense and not necessarily have a role in the process of it coming down could be problematic. So we're working closely with the County Engineers Society, our association, to deal with the turnback issues. Road dedications, where we're actually creating a new road, road orders and road extinguishments or vacations will all alter the number of miles at any one point. According to MnDOT, we have 6,220 active bridges on the system, which is approximately one-half of the total local government bridges. I don't think that includes the state bridges, but one-half of the local government bridges are town bridges. You can probably tell which ones they are. They tend to be the older ones. Many of them are still the timber bridges that you'll cross. There's, at any one time, 350 to 425 average bridges on the MnDOT priority list for repair or replacement, because they've hit that critical massive of deficiency. In addition to the structurally deficient, and again, this is where we're very grateful for good relationships with the county engineers, they currently do our bridge inspections, and it's a very beneficial program. In addition to those that are found structurally deficient, we have problems with bridges becoming structurally use deficient. They're too narrow to allow. They're functionally obsolete. They just don't allow the size vehicles, the trucks, and the farm implements to be able to cross them. And Mr. Peterson will address that a little bit later in more detail. The estimate of replacing all these deficient bridges will range anywhere from $72 to $100 million, depending on the year and the cost. For the last year of audited numbers, it was average. If we were to replace every bridge on the town bridge on the deficiency list, it would have cost just under $83.5 million to take care of the town bridges on that list. So it's not a cheap undertaking. We are trying to reduce costs by using box culverts when possible. A 10-foot-wide box culvert or wider will constitute a bridge. And in a number of situations, that becomes a very good approach. However, in other cases, you have somebody have to do the span bridge, and the cost will go up from there. In 2015, the last year for which we have audited numbers, townships cumulatively spent $168.5 million on roads. 144 were attributed to the maintenance, which would be snow plowing, grading, basic work, and $24.4 million was for construction or equipment purchases, and I will assure you that most of that was equipment purchase. As Mr. Peterson will talk about, there's not been a lot of new road construction or rebuilding of roads in many, many years. But the way that the auditor collects the numbers, they lump the construction and equipment purchases in one. It's not clear to us exactly where noxious weed control falls into these distributions. It probably is in the $144 million. But in addition to having to take care of the noxious weeds in the roadsides, we have to take care of everything that spreads both on private property and our big problems dealing with DNR and MnDOT lands where the weeds will spread. So percentage of township expenses, road expenditures, was 59.6% of our total expenditures. Basically, 60% of our budget goes to road and bridge maintenance. Our funding for that, well, again, when you look at the auditor's office, 73% property tax dependent, 73%. And that number isn't going down. On average, we've been getting about 16.2% of our funding comes from the Highway User Trust Fund and 10% miscellaneous. Now, when you start crunching the numbers, it can get hard to balance, you know, exactly what goes into which percentage. But those other items will be some of the local road improvement funds, local bridge account, which is through the bonding, as Ms. Donahoe walked through a few minutes ago. We occasionally, not often, but occasionally will have a project that actually is direct bonding eligible. There's some limited permit fees, and particularly in the metro area, there are some fine revenues that can be used and helpful for road projects. Looking at, like I said, 73% of our expenditures are coming from the property tax. The next only real source of funding we get for is the Highway User Trust Fund. And it gets complex if you haven't followed it before. There's a 5% set-aside of the Highway User Trust Fund. Of that 5%, 30.5% is set aside for town roads and 16% for bridges. Last year, according to MnDOT, that amounted to still over $40 million for roads and a little over $16 million for bridges. There's some indirect benefits from the flex account, which is the last part of the 5% set aside, where some of that money can be used for upgrading the roads before they are turned back to the townships. In the 2012 TFAC report, the estimated need for us to just break even at our current maintenance levels, not for new, just breaking even on current maintenance, we were going to need another $300 million over 20 years, which would have been about $15 million a year more than we're receiving currently. However, when we started working with MnDOT last fall, as we were updating our info for the legislature, it actually is coming out much closer to $20 million with the inflation that has occurred. And so with that, you can see that we are very serious about the need for a transportation funding bill. Yes, we are the ones that you will still hear those dirty little words, gas tax, from, tab fees. Why? Because that is the current primary source of funding to the Highway User Trust Fund. I want to assure you we are absolutely open to any and all discussions of funding, but on behalf of our members, we are obligated to point out that that's the current funding structure that's there, and that's why you hear from our folks that that's what we're supporting. But we absolutely are open to anything that can get to those kind of numbers. But it's not going to be easy for any of us, but we need to do it, and we need to do it now. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my boss, the Executive Director of the Association, Gary Peterson.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Mr. Chair, Committee, Gary Peterson, Executive Director of Minnesota Association of Townships, and I live in Elmira Township in Olmsted County. Thank you for having us in this afternoon, and what I want to focus on is the long-range plans and needs for township roads. Kent talked about year to year what we need, the $15 to $20 million for maintenance, but we're not addressing our needs for the future. And our future is getting closer by the day. When I first became a town board member in about 1985, my township was regrading about a mile of road a year. And we were making a lot of progress. We went through the 80s like that, and then when we kind of hit the economic hard times, the cost of construction skyrocketed. That road construction for townships stopped. Our township has not done a mile of grading on our roads since about 1991. That's a long stretch. My township is not singled out as being different than the rest of the townships in the state. So when I talk about what are we going to do, there's a lot of things that are driving this. The increased truck traffic that we have on our township roads. The farmers nowadays have semis. Many of them have multiple semis that run up and down our roads. The ag equipment just continues to get larger. We're not anti-ag. We're pro-ag. That's who we are. We need to be able to accommodate these people, and that's what we want to do. We maybe need to look at starting some type of a funding source similar to the bridge account that we now have. Why? Because we're going to need to redo these roads in the future. We're getting worse and worse by the year, and our needs are getting bigger and bigger. And I'd appreciate if you started having that conversation and thinking about this. It's not going to get better. But that said, Mr. Chair, that's kind of the vision I wanted to share with you this afternoon. Again, thank you for having us here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Peterson. And Mr. Solom,
if I may, just real quickly, last few pages of the handout is a copy. You should have all received by now our policies for the year, but I did attach just our transportation-related policies to the handout. So if you have any questions about that, it's there for your research. And with that, the last thing we'll say before taking any questions is please join us for breakfast next Wednesday at the Capitol Ridge, as we all know, the Kelly. Once Kelly, always the Kelly. But next Wednesday morning, starting at 7, we will have our legislative breakfast. Hope to see you all there.
Well, thank you. I have a question from Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, gentlemen. This may be a real obvious question, but I wanted to highlight it. When I think of township roads, I picture a lot of ag equipment. I picture the product making its way to market, and I picture children going to school on school buses. Are there alternative modes of transportation for those activities other than the township roads?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Peterson.
I would say in rural Minnesota, no. I'm not aware of any other modes of transportation. As residents of the area, you have your own vehicle, and that is your mode of transportation. And you're right. We share the road. And something I forgot to say a little bit earlier, when that combine is going down the road in the fall, and I'm not talking about with the head on. I'm talking about just the combine. And I meet that combine with my vehicle. Two of my wheels are in the ditch. I'm stopped, allowing the combine to go by me. He's probably got four wheels of his in the ditch. That's how critical it is. It's a safety issue. But thank you for the question.
Representative Mason has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can't remember if you were here last year, but you probably were. Last session, we didn't get a major transportation bill out. We didn't get the bonding bill out. So my question is, how, just from your perspective, what do you think needs to be done so that we can actually get enough votes to pass a significant bill in either category?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Solom.
Chair, Representative Mason. I think there needs to be a lot of very intense dialogue. I think today's a very good start for that. Last year, the bills that were out there, the Senate file would have raised approximately $13 million for town roads. The House proposal, as it began, was only $6 million. By the end, the numbers were closer to $18 million. Unfortunately, I don't have the paper to document all that because there was so much that was just verbal exchanges and verbal offers in those crazy closing hours of last session. But I hope that after you've heard from all the groups today that this committee can really sit down and have that conversation about how do we get to these kind of numbers. Because the more we delay it, the worse it gets. So we've gone from $15 million in 2012 to $20 million additional needs because there hasn't been any increase in funding. It's not going to get cheaper, folks.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for one of the testifiers, a little bit of background. I farmed for many years, and we farmed on a township road. And so and I've been to a lot of township meetings, and I understand exactly the difficulties that townships have. And this question is only designed to spirit discussion and thoughts. But my question revolves around what percentage of dollars could come from the township and the township people that use it, and how much should come from others. Because after all, whether it's property tax or gas tax or whatever, it is taxes that are being paid by everybody and individuals. In townships, it seemed to me, in my experience, most of the activity and the use of that road was for local use. It was for the individual. I mean, sometimes we got UPS trucks out there and other things, but generally speaking, that was still for our particular use. And so it made sense for us to spend a certain amount or a high percentage of our budget on local roads. My question is, you commented about 73% of the cost comes from taxpayers in property taxes. Is that or is that not just an appropriate level? And that's just a question to ask.
Mr. Sulem.
I'm sure you're, Mr. Peterson will have some thoughts too, but I can tell you that our town roads, yes, you can see there's a lot of local traffic. There's also a lot of seasonal use serving the lakes and the cabins. We tend to have a lot of people like to go joyriding on our roads and do. They drive up from the metro and they'll take their ATVs out after the rain and make quite a mess out of our roads. We are an essential link from the farm to the market. You know, you can only get to the product if you start off on the town road. So it is a great benefit to the state as a whole. What is a perfect number? You know, I think we can have some discussions on that, but I can tell you that the property tax being a fairly regressive form of taxation at 73% and increasing with an aging and declining population base, it's hard to bring people back into that setting and be able to make progress elsewhere. The other thing unique about townships is local option sales tax are useless for us. We don't have the industry that collects revenue. It might help our neighboring cities and the counties. We looked at doing a surcharge on the wheelage tax when that was started for the counties. You can't break it. The addresses, the mailing addresses for the car registrations are city post offices or PO boxes. So trying to track who's actually in the township made it impossible to do that. And so that's why, you know, we are property tax dependent and we are state aid through the gas tax, higher user trust fund, dedicated sales tax, whatever combination we can put together. You know, I think we'd like to get closer to the 50-50, but we know we can't keep increasing at 73 and climbing.
Just Mr. Chair? Very quickly, Representative Petersburg. Then I'll let you go. Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The 73% is, I think, extremely high. And when our townships look at having to raise more money for infrastructure in the roads, we cannot go to our people and raise it even higher. Just to give you an idea, I own a couple farms where I live. I rent them out now, and I told my renter the lease was up this year. I says, I'm not going to raise the rent other than the property tax increases. That was $15 an acre from the last 3 years ago. So that's significant, and that's not an increase from townships and their levies either. So it's a serious thing, and that's, again, why I'm saying we need the state's help. We need the big picture of this to look at township roads because we all use it and our road system is only as good as the weakest link.
Follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you. Just very briefly. No, I understand. In my township, virtually 100% of its budget went to roads to repair that, and yet that is an expectation of the landowner that's there, and we all have to make tough decisions and prioritizing of where we fund it. Even in the state, we don't have unlimited dollars on where we do it, and so we're just asking to everybody kind of feel the pain along with the rest of us. So thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it.
I have a quick final question myself. As you may know, the Minnesota Department of Transportation has decided that they need to more closely educate ditch mowing. So they've got all these permits and all this stuff they're trying to do, whereas my township actually charges me if I don't mow the ditch. Can you tell me if you intend to start issuing permits?
Mr. Chair, the law is kind of a hodgepodge to try to read with this. You're not likely to see a lot of permits coming from the township because we have an easement right. We don't have ownership right, which means that the property owner and the township usually can work together and figure out what needs to be done on the right-of-way. Your township has adopted, there's a provision, Chapter 367, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the subpart, that allows at the annual meeting the residents to say the abutting owners shall take on the responsibility for rock removal, shrub removal, weed removal, etc. And if not done by a set date, usually in the fall, the township will come through, do the work, and bill it back. And I know you and I have talked to your office about some of this unique situation that occurred, but that's one of the unique provisions of the statutes for townships, which is why we're very grateful to Representative Swazinski that he restored us to status quo in his bill yesterday.
Thank you. That's it, folks. We'll move on to the League of Cities. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. The League is a membership organization made up of 833 out of Minnesota's 853 cities. Some fun facts here. We do represent all of the cities of the first class. In addition, we represent a number of small cities all the way down to the city of Funkley, Minnesota, with a population of 10. They just hit double digits in the last census, and that's up in Beltrami County. The League, in addition to advocacy, provides education, training, policy development, risk management, and other services, and we also operate an insurance trust. Before I get into the briefing, I wanted to give the affiliate associations that we work with an opportunity to introduce themselves. So I would ask for Carolyn Jackson, Steve Huser, and Jill Sletten to just briefly share a little bit about their associations and the work we do together.
Welcome, and if you could please introduce yourself and identify who you work for.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Jill Sletten. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, and we represent cities 5,000 and under in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Steve Huser. I'm with Metro Cities. Our association represents 90 member cities in the 7-county metro.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Carolyn Jackson. I'm a lobbyist with the firm Flaherty & Hood, and we represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. It's an association of 88 cities in Greater Minnesota, and we lobby on issues specific to Greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. You may continue, Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I just want to impress on you that we represent collectively all of the cities in the state, and we do work together. We meet regularly, and we try to collaborate as much as possible on our agendas. Also wanted to identify some of our partners, and most important are you. As you know, you serve our constituents, the constituents that are served by local elected officials as well, and it's very important to them and to us that we continue to exchange good information and have good relationships. And we spend quite a bit of time at the League helping our members understand how to get in touch with you and what kinds of information we think would be helpful. But we would encourage you to do the same and reach out to those folks if they can be helpful to you with the work you're doing here. We also work closely with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, particularly state aid. Our cities have good relationships with the Metropolitan Council for the most part, as well as our counties. They also depend on economic development authorities and businesses to get their transportation work done. Here are just a few kind of fun facts about Minnesota cities. As you heard from Mr. Huser, we have a 7-county metropolitan area. with 139 cities. Of the remaining cities, those in greater Minnesota, only 36 have a population above 10,000. You'll see that most of our cities are actually very small. Almost half have a population below 500, and almost 500 cities have a population below 1,000. So the bottom line is that our cities are very diverse. The one thing we do agree on is that Minnesota cities, large and small, rural, urban, and suburban, support passage of an omnibus transportation funding bill that is comprehensive, multimodal, and sustainable. I couldn't help myself with this. I have a house full of teenage boys, and they love this show, but we do, at the city level, support and deliver a diverse blend of modes aimed at nurturing local economies and meeting the needs of residents. We're not going to cover all the modes today because they're sort of unique from city to city, but I'm going to talk about two parts of the system that our cities own and operate. Briefly, the first one is airports. In Minnesota, we have 135 publicly owned airports, the metropolitan area, plus the MSP, plus six relievers. And then we have 129 airports in greater Minnesota that are mostly city-owned. These airports are important to supporting not just the needs of the traveling public, but also business activities, particularly in regional centers. The State Airports Fund is the primary funding source for the airports, and that is a source of dedicated taxes on aviation fuel, aircraft registration, and airline flight property. I'm going to spend the remainder of this presentation on something that's universal to all cities, and that's our city street system. And I know you've heard some of these this briefing before, but I found that in my almost two decades now of talking about these issues, it helps to maybe talk about them and hear them more than once so that it really sinks in. So I apologize for those of you who already know all these things. The city street system is made up of about 22,500 miles. It's about 16% of the roadways in Minnesota, and it's where most trips begin and end. It's made up of collectors and residential streets, and the quality of this system is very important to the local economies and to the public who use these streets. One of our biggest challenges is maintenance. Maintenance is essential in order to really maximize the investments that we've made in this infrastructure. Unfortunately, it's easy to defer maintenance when no one's complaining, when the pavement looks good. But at the same time, that's the best time to do the maintenance. And when I write my memoir one day, this is going to be like the front cover. The problem that we're dealing with is that it gets more expensive to maintain the system when maintenance is deferred. And as the system ages, the cost for repairs and reconstruction becomes a real problem. The city street system is actually divided into two. Talking about new construction, we know that as cities grow and as they encounter economic development opportunities, they sometimes need to build new streets. And in talking with our friends at State Aid, at MnDOT, they have said that the cost range to build a new city street is approximately $2.5 million to $3.5 million, and that is without things like utilities. That's just the footprint of the roadway. The city street system is divided into two systems. We have the municipal state aid system, and we've been talking a lot about that because that's the system that's funded through the dedicated revenue sources. And then we have a city street system. First, talking about MSA, that's the money that red slice there is what comes to cities from the dedicated revenue sources, the gas tax, the license tab fees, and the sales tax on motor vehicles. The cities that are eligible for MSA are those cities over 5,000 population. So we talked earlier about the fact that most of the cities in Minnesota are very small. So of our 853 cities, 148 are eligible to receive municipal state aid. They can use this aid on up to 20% of their streets, but they have to meet the requirements that come along with that money. So the shortcomings of the state aid system for cities are that most cities are not eligible. More than 700 of them aren't. In municipal state aid cities, the monies that cities receive are often consumed by their cost participation obligations in state and county projects. So one of the eligible uses for state aid is that they can help defray their costs as part of these other projects by using that money. When they do that, they end up diverting money off of the MSA system, and that falls back to the property tax or other revenue sources at the local level. So this is kind of the big slide for this presentation that I hope you'll remember as we talk about city streets going forward and as you weigh how to put together an omnibus transportation bill. Non-MSA city streets make up the bulk of our system. 84% of city streets are funded with the property taxes, special assessments, and also sometimes local government aid. In certain cases, the cities do get assistance from the county for some of their system and sometimes work with businesses on impact fees or other kinds of developer fees to help with parts of economic development projects. But this is the part of the city street system that really is giving our local elected officials the headaches. They're dealing with budget constraints. For those of you who have worked at the local level, you know that special assessments are a really quick way to fill up a council chamber with angry people. The special assessment system is not working well, and it's become more difficult with the decline in the housing market that has made the benefit test a real challenge. Maintenance is affordable, but not always a high priority. And then tax-exempt properties in our communities don't pay. So unless they're assessed with a special assessment, they're not contributing toward these systems, and that falls to the other property taxpayers. The Office of the State Auditor estimates that just around 24% of city budgets are being used for maintenance and reconstruction of streets. So it comes down to this. As you've heard from the other testifiers, the municipal street system is aging. And we have real constraints when it comes to figuring out ways to close the gap. We don't think that more cities becoming eligible for state aid is likely to happen. We don't see that level of growth. And it only makes the pie cut into smaller pieces. But in addition, special assessments and property taxes aren't very popular, and so we're falling further behind. If the revenues remain flat, these streets will continue to deteriorate, and it will have economic impacts as it already has in some communities, and property taxpayers will shoulder the burden. You heard Ms. Donahue and Mr. Sulem talk about the TFAC report. That was the report from 2012. In that report, it identified a $400 million funding gap, annual funding gap for 20 years to bring the city street system up to an economically competitive standard. To do the status quo would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $250 million. So before I conclude, I just want to tell you about some of our funding priorities for the 2017 legislative session. We do seek a dedicated revenue source for non-MSA city streets. That's the 84%. We're not asking for the legislature or the state to pay for everything, but it would be very helpful to the cities to have some source of revenue to help keep up with both their the city street system in small cities and large cities. There is a small cities assistance account that was created by the 2015 legislature, and that was funded one time with $12.5 million distributed to just over 700 cities. I want to tell you that was very well received. And the calls that I'm getting from our elected officials at the local level are, can we count on that money going forward? And so I would ask that you consider funding that on a long-term basis, but also that you create a similar account for the larger cities so that they can get some assistance with their non-MSA system. We have long sought authority to create street improvement districts, and this would allow cities to create districts for maintenance, reconstruction, and other activities, and it would be paid for with fees in the district. You all have not been widely loving of that proposal, but we'll still throw it out there because it's a tool that we think would be used responsibly and would be very helpful at the city level.
Okay,
and then finally, we would ask that you consider looking at cost participation. When cities help with state and county projects, they divert money out to their own system. And so having an account perhaps within the local road improvement program for that purpose, for competitive grants for cost participation would really provide some property tax relief and allow cities to spend their money on their own system and not diverting it to the state. And then finally, these are our other transportation priorities and things that we'll be supporting and talking to you all about as you put a bill together and as you consider hopefully a bonding bill in 2017. These are the corridors of commerce, transportation economic development programs, the local road improvement and local bridge accounts, and finally, rail safety improvements is something that we're hearing a lot from our officials. I know I gave you a lot of information. I'll be in your committee on a regular basis and making the rounds to many of your offices to answer any other questions you might have, but in the meantime, I'm here, and if you have questions, I'll be happy to help.
Thank you for your presentation. Representative Hornstein has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Finn, for a great presentation and all of your work over the years. So I was struck by the slide you had, non-MSA city streets, the 84%. Mm-hmm. And then the second bullet you talk about the property tax burden. And, you know, members, we talk a lot about subsidy and fare box recovery for transit, et cetera, but, you know, we have significant subsidies for roads and bridges, and I'm not, you know, there is a public role. I'm not complaining about subsidies. I am complaining about the level of property tax because that's the most regressive one we have. And have you tallied up statewide the amount of money that our taxpayers are subsidizing local roads with their property taxes? Like, is there a number? If you would consolidate, conglomerate, not the percentage,
nope,
but the actual raw figure that our taxpayers collectively throughout the state are subsidizing local roads with property tax.
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, I think that number is in your slides. Let's see. Basically, it's the number that I gave you from the state auditor. My apologies. Here are those numbers.
Okay.
So this is for 2015, and these are the most recent numbers we have, given the cycle of the audits. Cities budgeted $541 million for street maintenance and repair, and another $887 million for street construction and improvement. And I would say that is property tax and local government aid.
So then it's
Representative Hornstein.
Then if you add those up, we're looking at $1.5 billion.
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, that's correct, and it's not enough.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the presentation. It was definitely very helpful and eye-opening. Looking at the second to the last slide of priority bonding for transportation, the first bullet point there is corridors of commerce, which I likewise highly support, and it's a priority of mine. Because it's in your slide deck here, I just wanted to get clarification. Being a member of the Transportation Committee in the last 2 years, I recall that there was at least one amendment that was attempting to broaden the use of the Corridors of Commerce program to allow it to be used more in Main Street, et cetera. So is your intent, as it's a priority of yours, to keep it more strict as it's originally intended, to focus on the primary corridors in our state, or is it your goal to broaden that language to be used more in the local communities?
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we would support it either way. We do recognize that one of the constraints of the program right now is that it connects communities, but it doesn't always go through the community. And so we have heard from some cities that have had challenges where the project stopped at their border, even though the roadway went through their city. So we would support having more eligibility for Main Street, particularly when it's on a trunk highway or another part of the system that is funded with the Corridors of Commerce grant. That said, we will support the program regardless of whether you decide that's something you want to do or not.
Thank you. I do not have any more questions for you this afternoon. Thanks for being here, and thanks for your presentation. Did you have a question, Representative Hausman?
Yes, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair. The slide that's titled Priority Street Improvement District Authority would allow cities to collect fees for. Is there a reason why they wouldn't just, they already have the property tax, and these are the kinds of things you would normally use the property tax for? Why would there be an advantage to collect fees instead?
Ms. Finn.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, there are a number of reasons, one of them being that we have some tax-exempt properties that are very large that currently under the property tax system are not contributing. In addition to that, we think that by creating the district, cities could target where they're collecting and spending the money if they choose to do that, so that they could, you know, perhaps know that there's a part of the city that needs more attention. They could create a district there, whereas the property tax system is more of a blanket. And special assessments, as I mentioned, are not very popular either for nonprofit property owners or for residents and businesses.
And of course,
Representative Hausman,
you might need to check what the cities that have been sued when, because the nonprofits are saying, well, really a fee is a tax, mm-hmm. and we're tax exempt, and they win.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, we've been following that very closely, and I think part of the distinction with the case that you're discussing is that they were using the special assessment law, and there was a benefit issue there too. And we think that the street improvement district language gets away from having to prove that direct benefit. But you're correct. We would have to make sure that anything we advanced in that was carefully crafted to make sure that it meets the constitutional requirements. And we have not introduced that bill this year, so if anyone wants it, it has not been a fun one.
Thank you. I believe that concludes the questions. Thank you for your presentation. Next up, we have the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you. Welcome to committee. If you're ready, go ahead with your presentation and introduce yourself for the record.
All right. Sorry about the technical difficulties, Mr. Chair. My name is Emily Pugh, and I cover transportation and infrastructure policy for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And with me today, I have two special guests. We actually have our legislative conference going on right now, today and tomorrow. So with me, I have Wright County Commissioner Mike Potter and Carver County Engineer Lyndon Robgen. So we do have a PowerPoint that we'll pull up at some point. But first, I wanted to have Commissioner Potter and the engineer go over a few different things, kind of give some examples of some county-specific projects and challenges that they've experienced, and then we will go over the PowerPoint, what we have at the end. Thank you.
Welcome to committee. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Potter. I'm a Wright County Commissioner. I'm also chair of the AMC Transportation Infrastructure Policy Committee. And at the beginning, I'd like to thank Chair Torkelson for coming before our committee and speaking this morning. It was well received, and I thank you for that. Part of what we're here today is that in the counties, we all have issues with transportation. In Wright County, we have 511 miles of county road there. And Wright County is unique in the fact that we have three major corridors coming out of the metro, 94, Highway 55, and Highway 12. And of that, we have 70% of our working force migrates out of the county for it. So roads are very important here. One of the issues we have is that with the fast growth that we're experiencing, we're starting to see our roads not meeting design standards anymore, so it's a need for expansion. Currently, we have a cost of $12 million just to maintain them roads. And any expansion, we'd need to be north of $18 million. So the dollar numbers are getting staggering, and the growth is not slowing down for us. And Wright County, like everybody else and here, you're worked under a fiscally constrained policy. You're trying to, rein it in as much as you can. One of the challenges for Wright County is we're going to grow from the 10th largest county to the 7th largest county by 2040, and that's not that far off. So we need to address some of these issues, and I do want to thank the committee in the past on corridors of commerce and different funding mechanisms for 94 in particular. The return on investment on that has been fantastic. We're near 3 million square feet in industrial distribution center that's been there added to that, and plus more on the books. It's relieved that first segment there has already relieved about 55% of some of the problems we have. Our corridor represents, 1.4% of the region, but it's 55% of the congestion. So thank you for your funding and that and the continued support there. We have going here with all the counties. We've talked with all of the metro and greater Minnesota about some of the needs, and they've got, in the case of different needs but similar needs, how do we address these? And there's talks all over the board. How do we deal with this? And I know it's tough for you to make the decision. That's why we have you fine people here to help us, guide us through this process, because there's everything's there. And I am happy to answer any questions that you have. And I'll stop with the, you are all invited to a reception that we have for AMC later on today down at the Intercontinental Hotel if you're so. And I am open for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Did you have a quick question?
Yeah,
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, and thank you, Commissioner. I mean, I've known you over the years. You're a rock star when it comes to advocacy for transportation, and I really appreciate it. And, of course, all of the folks along I-94 have been very effective, and so I thought your comments about what you've leveraged through corridors of commerce is very helpful. But I'm wondering, I mean, I'm sure, you're probably okay with this, but I noticed that Wright has not availed itself of the wheelage tax option or the local option sales tax. Is that are the other commissioners not open to this? I will acknowledge that is not going to. That's a drop in the bucket what you get in terms of your needs, but it is helpful. We've had a lot of counties that have availed themselves of that. Again, it's local option. We're not imposing anything on anyone. What's the conversation been? Have you had those conversations about a wheelage tax or local option sales tax in the county?
Commissioner Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein. We've had talks in the past when it first came out. The wheelage tax wasn't going to bring it very much money in compared to what it is there, and it's very unpopular in Ray County because the constituents say basically put it on the ad valorem versus the car tax because it just looks bad. We are having conversations as we speak on the sales tax option because Wright County is actually sitting in a very good position on that with the outlet mall and the Mall of Entertainment. Now we have a potential truck stop coming there. I mean, so it's discussion on the table. And it took a while in actually changing one of the players in the commissioners to bring it to the forefront that it's actually up for discussion now. Before it was being blocked.
Yeah.
So it is a tool, and I thank the legislature for allowing us to have that tool in the toolbox. And unfortunately, we got to the point where it's crisis mode before you have to start doing something. Right. And I really do appreciate that tool being available there, and talks are in progress.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I think we should move into the presentation. I looked like your technology was in working order, and we do have bills up yet today before the end of our hearings, so I'm going to ask you to go straight through, and then we'll see if there's time for questions afterwards.
All right. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lyndon Robgen. I am the Carver County Engineer. It's an honor to be here. I just have some high-level items for you today on the county perspective on transportation funding. So counties, we have a lot in common. We all have deficient bridges that need fixing. We all have roads that need repair. We all have wetlands and other environmental features to protect. We all occasionally have flooding issues to deal with. We all have engineers with the same set of standards and ethics. We all need more money take care of our transportation system. We also have different needs and opportunities. We differ in that some counties have higher loads from farming equipment and other produce movement. Some counties have higher traffic volumes due to population. Some counties have more urban highways than rural and vice versa. Some counties have greater transit needs than others. And some counties have non-motorized needs than others. So the map in front of you, I think you have a handout of this, kind of tells a good story. I think the opportunities that each county has is reflected in this map. I think it shows a couple of highlights. 27 out of the 87 counties have implemented the half-cent sales tax. You can see the counties in blue are tourism counties, so they have a lot of non-residents that come into their counties and pay a significant share. Counties with commercial centers also benefit from this. But you can also see that the less populated rural counties do not benefit so much. 51 counties, and those are shown in green, have the wheelage tax out of 87. Counties that will not benefit from a sales tax have done this as a small source of revenue. So counties that benefits from both, which are shown in a combination of colors, green and blue, they both have commercial centers and higher population. But you can tell what I guess the takeaway from this map is, as more counties implement the tax, the smaller, less populated rural counties will be even a bigger disadvantage for funding. These counties rely on the highway user tax distribution fund more than anything else for their transportation revenue. Counties that have raised their own revenue from the sales tax are less likely to rely on a gas tax or another highway user tax distribution fund increase. So for a balanced system, we need to take care of every county in the state. We need to increase the highway user tax distribution fund, and counties need to utilize these other revenue sources available to them. Furthermore, MnDOT and the state highway system relies on this revenue from the highway user tax distribution fund more than any other source. I can't emphasize this enough. You've all heard about the MnSHIP plan that shows an $18 billion shortfall, and most of that is for preservation needs for the next 20 years. My county is an example of this. the county has to raise funds, has options. We have the sales tax that we're discussing, the half cent. We implement this, the wheelage tax. But we've decided that it's the state highways in Carver County that are in the worst shape. They're the oldest, they're the most congested, and there is zero mobility investment shown in Carver County for the next 20 years. So we as a county are forced to look at a sales tax and spend it on the state roads. So we've, out of our $800 million 20-year plan, we've determined, obviously we can't realize that kind of funding. We've prioritized $400 million of critical highway projects over the next 20 years, and 270 million of those are on the state highway system in Carver County. And these are roads that have no plans other than preservation in the MnDOT plan. No mobility dollars whatsoever in the next 20 years. So where is the revenue going to come from? Well, it's going to come from partnerships between the counties, the cities, and the state. And we are going to be forced into taking the lead. Is this a good model? No. It's actually the number one question we get from all our cities, all our townships. Why are you proposing to fix the state highway system? That's not your roadway. Well, my answer to them is they're the most significant highways in the county, and who else is going to do it? So I guess that we all have a role in the solution. Partnerships are very important, and the slide that you see here is the 101 bridge that we recently completed, and this is a class example of a great partnership. This roadway is between Shakopee and Chanhassen, if you're familiar with that. It flooded almost every significant rainfall event and every spring melt of significance. So the counties, the cities, and the state partnered to build a solution. 101 is a turnback route, so it was actually turned back to the county about a week before we let bids for construction. So it shows, really, it highlights the importance of partnerships as well as, in this case, the value of the turnback account. We led the project, but the county bonded for $18 million. The project was about $60 million, and we had a gap of about $18 million. The county bonded for that because there was no funding in the turnback account. Even though it was turnback eligible, there was nothing in there. So the county took on that risk, but what choice did we have? The commissioners stepped up to the plate, and the reason they did that was they knew they would have to wait 10, 15 years to do this project. Money, time is money, and they said, we got to do it. So they stepped up and borrowed money to get it done. It shows the takeaway from that is that 5% flex account out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund is vitally important. Just in Carver County alone, we have about $100 million of turnback projects left to be done. And without that funding source, which generates about $50 million a year, we've got no chance. So some takeaways: flexibility and compromise, build consensus. Every project we do, we have a partnership with the city, the townships, the state, the federal government in some cases. I can't stress enough how valuable that is. Agencies must work together to build an adequate system. We can't all get what we want. It's a great song, by the way. But we have many common goals. The state and locals must be willing to be flexible and compromise to get things done. We must all recognize the value of each other's priority. We can't keep saying no. We hear the word no a lot. That doesn't work. No. We don't go away. These projects are important to us. The Highway User Tax Distribution Fund is critical to MnDOT, more than anyone, but it's also critical to the counties and cities. Please don't revise the formula to tweak the turnback account. That's vital. It's very important in my county in particular. This is particularly important. The Highway User Tax Distribution Fund is vitally important for state roads and less populated rural counties that rely on that fund more than any other fund. With the sales tax discussion, that's a game changer for some of the bigger counties, some of the more populated areas that have commercial centers. Those small rural counties, they rely on this, the gas tax, the fund to fund their roadways. Bonding for local bridges is great value. There's a 50-50 partnership between the state, you guys, and us. There's 100-plus bridges on the waiting list waiting for funding. It's a great program. and we deliver those bridges very efficiently. Bonding for regionally significant projects is vital, too. I think there's a lot of argument about what should be in the bonding bill, what shouldn't. Those projects need to be done now, and if the interest rates are good, if you compare interest to construction inflation, it's a no-brainer. Funding the local road wetland bank, I don't know if you've had a chance to get educated on that, that's critical for us. That helps out all counties. Bowser does a great job of building these wetlands where they should be, rather than each county doing their own. But we need that fund restored. Bottom line is we're here to help. Counties know how to deliver projects. We can do it, but we need some assistance, and we need a little more money. So that's all I have.
Representative Runbeck has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Robgent, I believe it is. Could you just, for perspective's sake, tell us what your annual CASA funding amount is? And then also, if you were to do a local option sales tax, what would that generate for you?
Great question. Thank you,
Mr. Robgent.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we get about $6 million a year out of the CASA formula. The sales tax will generate about $3.5 million a year. That's equivalent to a 30-cent gas tax increase.
All right, thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last gentleman, I thought, just brilliantly laid out the importance of sticking with that old system where we were all in it together, that we all pay and it goes everywhere, and that as that revenue has been insufficient and we've gone to these others, we depend more on the property tax, we ask counties to impose wheelage tax or a county sales tax, that's when the inequities happen based on what those local areas are able to do. And so it was, you know, just for me, a chance for me to think back to those minds in the past. I think Bernie Leader might have been one of those who talked about gas tax, license tax, motor vehicle sales tax, and then what are all those formulas that treat everybody fairly. And I'm hoping in our discussions about transportation solutions this year that we will go back to that and understand how fair that was and the potential for a lack of fairness if we begin to depend on some of those local forms. The only comment I would have to your slide about bonding is if you can help us have the will to pass a bonding bill and pass bigger bonding bills and pass them more often, I could support you. But as long as we continue to pass small bonding bills, then the risk is you take it from higher education and wastewater infrastructure and corrections, all of those other causes that have no other tool. And so that's the help we would need from you to say we want to raise our sights for bonding, then we have to think of a bigger one, more definite, and more often.
I did not hear a question. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And earlier we heard the comment that we all need to make tough decisions, and I think I'm looking at some county commissioners here today who made some of those tough decisions. I know I'm looking at one of them. In fact, I know in two neighboring counties of mine, both in Brown County and Blue Earth County, they voted for an increase in the sales tax. They voted for a tax increase to provide better roads for those counties. But I share the concern of the engineer about the patchwork funding that we're laying out now over time across the state. And there's counties that have a great deal of production, a lot of transportation needs, but almost no retail sales. So that sales tax doesn't work. And so my question to the county association is, have you looked at this challenge over time? Do you have any suggestions on how to resolve it? Because there's winners and losers on this map, and over time it'll get worse and worse and worse. Have you looked at it? Do you have any ideas for us?
Ms. Pugh.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, right now we're just glad that we have these opportunities because as we have been waiting for a larger comprehensive transportation funding bill, this is something that helps in the meantime. In terms of looking at how it could be more beneficial for other counties, I think that's a good question. I think that's something we need to address. But right now it does work well for some. It doesn't work for everybody. And so that's a concern. You know, and I think it's been talked about a couple times today and earlier from other presenters, but it's just kind of a temporary solution right now, and it's helped us get through in the short term, but we do need something more long-term than that.
Mr. Robson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think if you look at the formula, the 6229, the HUTTF formula, that works. That is a solid formula, and it does distribute the money in a fair manner to every county, including the ones that don't have a lot of other revenue sources. So the secret is to increase revenue in that fund. That will help out all of those smaller counties.
Representative Mason has a question. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So am I understanding it correctly? You're challenging us to make the tough decision to raise the taxes for the distribution fund. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
We try to avoid putting words in people's mouths around here, Representative Johnson.
Representative Mason has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the comments from both of our testifiers, and again, you're illustrating the fact that local governments have to keep fronting for MnDOT because they never have the money, which goes back to how do you get a bill passed by the state. And then if I can ask the engineer a personal question, it sounds like you're not from Minnesota. And I'm just wondering where you grew up, if they did anything more creative or that was more efficient than what we're currently doing in Minnesota?
The country of origin question.
Mr. Chair, thanks for the question. Appreciate it. I was actually born in Zambia, Africa. So if you want to see bad infrastructure. I went to school in England, so I went from a really poor country to a really modern country. That's why I do what I do, because we can build some good stuff. The English system, big fuel tax, let me tell you. If you've been to England and you've driven cars there, they're a little smaller, but you pay a lot at pumps.
I have been to England, Mr. Rajent, but they drive on the wrong side of the road.
And fast.
It's very scary. We're kind of running out of time.
Mr. Chair, you know, the one thing I just want to highlight, and we won't go through it, but you do have this PowerPoint in your packet. If you have any questions, a lot of the things that are in here have been already touched on today or in previous presentations to this committee, so we don't want to take more of your time. And you obviously have a copy of our wheelage tax and local option sales tax map. So those are our two important takeaways. AMC itself, just as a final thought, our top transportation priorities this year are passing a comprehensive transportation funding bill, as well as funding for the local road wetland replacement program. And we want to thank the House for your quick passage or quick movement of that bill, House Bill 434. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Ms. Pugh. Any other final remarks from the other testifiers? If not, thank you for your presentation. Members, we have three bills before us this afternoon. The first one is House File 241, Representative Garofalo's bill. I believe he is in the room. We will move this bill to be passed and moved on to the Tax Committee. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a bill that, as far as I know, is opposed by no one, so hopefully this will be brief. What it does is a change to how compressed natural gas is taxed. Currently, candidly, there's an error in law, and this makes it equivalent to the gas, but the energy content is taxed off of the gas equivalent. It's been supported on a bipartisan basis in the past, and it's the one time you'll see a Garofalo-Hornstein bill this session. So that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you. I think the co-author would like to make a remark.
Mr. Chair, Marshall. You know it's a good bill.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Mr. DeLaForest, did you have any comments to this bill?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Chris DeLaForest representing Minnesota's waste haulers. Their official position is that this is a sweet bill.
A sweet bill.
Yes. Ask for the committee support.
Thank you. I do not have any questions from members, and seeing none, I think we are fully informed and ready to vote. Although I will renew my motion that this bill be passed by this committee and moved on to the Tax Committee, House File 241. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed by the same sign. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next up, we have a Torkelson bill. I'm just going to handle it from heat. Well, we got lots of time.
We're going to go up. Do I have a copy?
8:37.
There we go.
I believe Chair Jarkelson has a bill in front of us, House File 837, and I think the department is has some comment too, if not.
Who wants to file? You want? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 837 be passed by this committee and move to Ways and Means.
Go ahead with your testimony, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. House File 837 deals with the FAST Act funds that are available to the state of Minnesota from the federal government, and I will call upon the able-bodied bureaucrat to explain the bill.
Mr. Peterson, please identify yourself and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the able-bodied bureaucrat from MnDOT, Scott Peterson. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here because I'm really grateful to Representative Torkelson and Representative Johnson for bringing this forward. This bill appropriates $105 million in federal funds that have been made available to the state of Minnesota as a result of the passage of the FAST Act, which is a federal reauthorization bill. It was passed about a year and a half ago now. This, by passing this appropriation separately and early on in the session, it gives us the opportunity to keep projects that are currently in our living schedule on their currently scheduled dates so that we can get these projects done underway this construction season. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, my question is where this bill goes. It's going to Ways and Means. Do you anticipate that we'll see this on the floor soon?
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I do not know the answer to that question at this time. I believe that, you know, the issue certainly is one that's very important that we will address in one fashion or another this session. Whether or not it travels as a standalone bill, I do not know.
Representative Johnson?
I'd like to just follow up, and because as you see, the next bill is Representative Gunther and I are authors on the bill, and it really came out of, I submitted that bill, it's identical to this bill, so I'll just comment on it now to be efficient. And I was at an Area Transportation Partnership meeting in District 7, and this is, I think I've mentioned this meeting before, we have very robust Area Transportation Partnership, where the subcommittee is working, they're making decisions about what projects move forward and timing and that sort of thing. It's a very involved process, and my compliments to the District 7 folks for putting that together and doing it well. But something came out of that meeting that really kind of alarmed me, and it was that the comment was made that some projects will be delayed if we don't move this money forward, and specifically one in Fairmont where there's a significant work being done in Fairmont along a commercial district, and the comment was made that some of the, I believe it's the poles or part of the turn signals, has like a 6 to 8 month lead time to get that delivered to the site. So they need to be buying the parts or some of the components of that project now. And so I guess my encouragement would be what you could do with the, to encourage, I assume you're on the member of the Ways and Means Committee, and if you could talk to the chair and that sort of thing to move this ahead directly to the floor to make sure that the project in Fairmont, and I can just imagine in the other districts there's likely other projects that may be delayed, so we can make sure the construction happens this summer. So that would be my word of encouragement, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And Chair Torkelson, do you have any final comments for the bill? I see no
Well, I
questions.
Would like to dive into that just a little bit further, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. I've gotten some kind of mixed messages from the department. I'd like them to comment on that as to the availability of funds to move these projects forward that are involved with this fund and just how the timing affects that.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. Let me find my piece of paper here. So, In anticipation of having these funds available, of course, a lot of these projects have some lead times, as Representative Johnson alluded to. We went ahead and programmed those funds and set these projects up in the letting schedule in anticipation that they would be the funds would be available. And then after we realized that the funds might be delayed, and people who have been around know that we asked to have these funds appropriated last session. We tried to go through the Legislative Advisory Commission process, and that wasn't successful either, so that's why we're here today. Anyway, we went through a process to identify the projects that would be delayed or deferred if the money was not appropriated, and so we have a list of projects here, and I'm not fully clear on the schedule on which ones are scheduled but in April, but it's my understanding that some of them are scheduled for letting in April, and that means that projects will be advertised in March at some point, and bids will be opened in April, and then there's probably a series of similar lettings that proceed until sometime in the summer for all the projects that are on the list.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the projects are moving forward at this time?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Representative Torkelson, yeah, the projects are still being worked on. Again, we haven't made the decision yet, hoping that, you know, something will happen that will allow us to continue to move forward, not have to delay the projects, because, again, that starts to get in to the letting schedule a little bit. And for people who are familiar with our business, we try to space these lettings out and not have too many on the calendar for any 1 month, because that tends to increase, or I should say decrease, the competition for some of the projects, because contractors can only bid on so many each letting period, because there's a limited number they can actually do if they win the bid. So in order to try to get better bids anyway, we try to space them out. And if we have to stack more of them in some of the future months in the summer, at a minimum, that would be the impact. And if they get deferred too far, then it may have to wait till the next construction season.
Chair Charles, do you have any follow-up? I do have a couple other questions.
Real quickly, well, thank you for that information. And Mr. Chair and members, I'd just like to say that we will stay in close communication with the department and do anything we can to avoid any actual delays.
Okay. Representative Hausman, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't, until the comment from the author that he wasn't sure what the plan was. When I saw this, I thought, really, finally, we're just going to do this. But his answer to that, to Representative Johnson's question, sounded like he's not sure if we're fast-tracking. And I think, we've listened to some arguments about urgency. We have we heard the Rural Finance Authority, and we said we've got to fast-track that. They're out of money. We heard about road wetland replacement, and we had to fast-track it because they're out of money. But it would seem to me that this bill fits that category as well, and that that everybody should be urging equal speed on this one because they're out of money.
Chair Torkel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hausman. We just heard, though, that these projects are not currently being delayed.
Well, Mr. Chair and the author, I thought he said they're hoping, and so they're continuing to do the work hoping this money will materialize. I thought that's what I heard, not that they can go forward without this. Did I misunderstand, Mr.
Peterson, do you want to clarify?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, yes, it's my understanding that these projects cannot move forward without this funding. It's just the timing of the projects and when the funding comes, and there might be some that can move forward. Again, I'm not aware of the details and the technicalities around when some of them could move forward, but my understanding is they will start to delay them beginning in April.
Representative Hausman, do you have a follow-up? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, Chair Torkelson. You know, historically these funds have been direct appropriation by the legislature, so I appreciate you bringing the bill forward, and I presume then that has now reestablished with the department as well. It's more of a statement than a question, unless he's got anything else to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Torkelson, would you like to have the final word?
Just that whether or not this moves forward quickly at least takes the next step so that we are prepared for a move should it be advisable, and we will, as I said earlier, stay in close communication with the department to assure that we can facilitate projects whenever possible.
Thank you, and Chair Torkelson renews his motion to refer this to Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? As prevails. Okay. Next we have House File 633, Clark Johnson Bill. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I presume I make the motion to lay this over, but I want to make the motion to fast-track this directly to the floor of the Minnesota House so we can get this spent. But my motion would be to lay this over.
Your previous motion is correct.
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to it, and thanks for the opportunity to move this project forward. I do, you know, as indicated by the questions, I do encourage that all of us contact our colleagues on the Ways and Means Committee and move this forward. I can't think of a reason not to move it forward. I can see no advantage to waiting. This money is available. It's been available for a while. Boy, what I'm hearing all over the state, we need funding for roads, and we need it now. And here's an opportunity to do it, so I hope the other bill moves forward. But let's lay this one over to keep it clean. Thank you very much.
Okay, and for the committee, this really is pretty much an identical bill from the last one that we've heard. And so the motion is to lay over possible inclusion. Do we need one? Yes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. I think we are finished with our business, but I do have an announcement. Next meeting, Tuesday the 21st, we have 9 bills to be heard, and we'll meet at 1 p.m. Any bills not finished will be taken up at 5:30 in this very room as well. So we have a busy schedule starting next week. So Tuesday we have 9 bills up. Anything that we won't get to carry over, we'll do that in the evening. Any questions about that? If not, this meeting is adjourned.